Relationships can be complex. Sometimes we get ourselves very entangled by bad choices. Sometimes we see those we love get themselves into tough positions. But there are some who have a knack for knowing just how to disentangle situations. Have a look at this parrot. There he is with a real tough problem that would keep people going for a while. Just a parrot, and he solved it in a lot quicker than a lot of people would take. Well, tonight on Storyline, we meet someone who had to meet a lot more than a brain teaser. The eternal destiny of the king hung in the balance. Welcome to Storyline. I'm Chantelle Klingbeil. Thank you for joining me. We're coming to you live, and this means that if you want to ask a question or contribute to the program, you're very welcome to do so throughout our show. It's very simple. You can do it also in a variety of ways. You can call toll-free 888-9-STORYLINE or use 707-200-1070 to call or to text. And if you want that more instant interaction, find Storyline on Facebook. Storyline is all about stories. Now, I'm not talking bedtime stories or children's stories. I'm talking real, true-to-life stories of Bible characters. People that faced issues, challenges, faith questions. People who, like us, lived in times of change and crisis. In Storyline, we focus on these Bible characters. We look over their shoulders as they struggle with family problems and watch their lives fall apart. As we step into their world to study life from their perspective, we look at their challenges, their heartbreaks, their victories. Why? Well, to find clues for our lives. Studying these Bible characters gives us those perspectives that we need. And the part I like best. In all of these storylines, we find a God who loves us intensely and immensely. Sometimes God's love may not seem immediately apparent. God loves us, but God hates the thing that's hurting us, the sin that can make our lives so miserable. Often, we're so enamored with the things that are actually killing us that we act very defensively when anyone tries to give us a wake-up call. Finding the right way to make that call can be difficult and dangerous work. Take Nathan, for instance. If you have your Bible nearby, you can find this story in the book of 2 Samuel. Have a look in 2 Samuel 12, and we'll be looking at the first 13 verses. Let's rewind about 3,000 years. War is always destructive, dangerous business. One of King David's best generals, Uriah, was killed in battle. King David, the great King David, who at this point already had several wives, moved very quickly and married Bathsheba, Uriah's widow. I think rumors must have already been circulating. Of course, these rumors were anonymous completely. It would never do to reach the king's ears. That would be dangerous. As dangerous as leading a special attack force in battle. But God didn't need any rumors. God knew. He knew all about David's involvement with Bathsheba. And he knew about David's hand in Uriah's death. And God sent Nathan to David. Imagine being in Nathan's shoes. How would Nathan broach such a delicate topic with the king? Nathan decides on a unique approach. I can imagine that David was less than happy when he saw Nathan's name in his appointment book. I can imagine David's knuckles turning white as he grips the armrests of his throne. And so Nathan begins to tell David a story. A story that draws David in, disarms him. Better said, Nathan begins to present a case before the king, a case requiring the king's judgment. Nathan begins. Living in the city, there were two men. A rich man who owned extensive flocks and great herds of cattle, and a poor man who had nothing except for one little female lamb that he bought and raised. Now, he didn't raise it as a farm animal. Oh no, this little lamb was a pet. No, it wasn't a pet. It was much more than a pet. It ate from his plate. It drank from his cup. It slept with his family. No, this little lamb was like a daughter to him. I can imagine a smile playing across King David's lips as he imagines this little lamb curled up on the laps of the children. And then the story takes an awful turn. You see, the rich man got a guest. A traveler came by, and the rich man had to provide a meal for the traveler. Now, instead of taking a lamb from one of his extensive flocks, the rich man looked over the fence and grabbed this little female lamb belonging to the poor man. He took the lamb, slaughtered it, and served it to his guest for a meal. Nathan didn't even have to ask King David to make a judgment call. At this point in the story, David actually leaps off his throne and shouts. He just explodes with anger. As surely as God lives, that man ought to be killed. And then, regaining his composure, he pronounces sentence. That man must repay the poor man four times over for the lamb that he so heartlessly took. He must pay for his cold-hearted meanness and stinginess. Nathan had made his point. And now, looking the king straight in the eye, he states, "You are the man. Now listen to what God says to you. I made you king over Israel. I delivered you from Saul's fist. I gave you Israel and Judah, and I want to bless you even more. You had wives. So why? Why did you treat the word of God with such brazen contempt by doing this great evil? You killed Uriah the Hittite. You took his wife. And worse, you killed him with the Ammonite sword. And then you stole his wife. As a consequence, killing and murder will plague your family." Nathan had delivered the message. And now, how would David take it? The silence in the room must have been tangible. Nathan's story had its effect. No blaming, no finding excuses, no taking it out on Nathan. David's hard heart breaks and he confesses to Nathan, I have sinned. This will unfortunately not be the end for David. There will be consequences, consequences to be faced. But Nathan, with his tactful approach, has helped David. He's helped David back onto the path of being a man after God's own heart. And now Nathan has another message for David. God knows that as David faces one heartbreaking, painful consequence after another in his life, he will need all the reassurance he can get. So he gives a special message to Nathan. This time, Nathan doesn't tell a story. This time, Nathan simply states, God has forgiven you. David had worked his way into a corner. One bad choice had led to another. With each wrong choice, the situation became more and more desperate. Helping desperate people is tricky business. We have with us two young ladies who've spent their summer helping people who get into desperate situations. Welcome to Storyline, Heather and Hannah. Good to have you. Well, for several people this summer, they literally had their lives in the hands of these young ladies. Right after our break, we find out how. Heather Wallin and Hannah Klingbeil are both freshmen who've completed their lifeguard certification this summer and have spent time rescuing people who get themselves into trouble in pools. Well, welcome again to both of you. Thank you for joining us. I know you would like to be studying and doing things like that right now, so thank you for taking time out to come over here. Ladies, why do people get into trouble in pools in the first place?
Well, many times they just ignore the rules, and sometimes they do things that sometimes don't make much sense.
Stupid things.
Yes.
Well, I mean, some people take dares, or they just don't know how deep it is, and they go jump in, and you wonder, why did they do that?
They do that. So just jumping off the diving board when you can't swim and things like that.
Yeah.
Breaking the rules. Making poor choices. Bottom line.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. Now, how do you ladies know when someone is in trouble?
Well, when we took the lifeguard course, we had to learn how to recognize if someone is in trouble. Mm-hmm. And usually you can, like, they're splashing or
maybe they're just a bad swimmer.
Well, yeah, but they might even yell out for help, or, I mean, it's a little kid who just slid down the sliding and fell in and, oh, it's too deep, they can't swim.
And then so you notice they're in distress.
Down there for them. Yes. Yeah,
down here. Now, I guess you want to get them before they stop moving.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, but then it's almost already too far gone.
Yeah.
I'm looking at you two. You are both shorter than I am. Okay, I've got a bit of a heel, but still. And you both look as if you are lighter than what I am. Could you rescue me?
Yeah, we could. But it is not only the size or strength. It's more of the technique that you use.
Aha!
Water also is, whatever you put into it is lighter. So it's, you're not as heavy.
So you're saying that I won't be as heavy in water,
yes.
In other words. So it's not all about size and strength. It's about knowing how to rescue people. So you could rescue a full-grown man or a very heavy person if you just know how.
Yes.
Technique is everything. Well, I would be interested to see some of this technique. Who's going to drown for us?
Her.
Okay. So, Heather, she looks like she's in distress. How are you going to go about this?
Well, first, you have a rescue tube on your lap, and you...
That's this?
Yes. That.
And this you're going to strap around yourself.
Yeah, you hold it so it's under your arms, and you swim out to the person, make sure the tube is between you, and then you come from behind the person, reach under their armpits, mm-hmm. and try to touch your shoulders, and lean back and swim back to the shore. Yeah.
Why did you approach her from the back? Why can't you just go head on? I mean, you're coming to rescue someone.
Well, I mean, if someone comes head on, the people panicking, they don't really know what's going on or something, and they might just grab onto you, and you guys will both go underwater, and you can't rescue them or help them actually get to the edge of the pool. So when you come from the back, they can't really turn around and, like,
grab onto
you or something. Yeah.
I guess it's kind of a natural instinct to grab onto something that looks like it's solid.
Yeah.
So you have to watch out for yourself as well when you're rescuing.
Yes.
Yes.
Because I guess the idea is that you don't want two drowned people at the end of the day. Now, I've heard that some people actually fight their rescuers off. I find this hard to believe. Does this happen?
Yes. When people are super, super scared, they just try to either fight everything off or grab onto everything that's there. But unfortunately, most of the time, they try to fight you off.
So there they are in desperate need, in desperate trouble, and they're trying to fight you off. What do you do? Especially if it's someone, you know, big.
Well, I mean, so you're behind the person and you grab them. They might be struggling. You want a firm hold on them so that they don't turn around and try to grab hold of you, maybe. And you also want to tell them that you're a lifeguard, because if someone approaches you and starts grabbing hold of you, like, hey, you'll start fighting them. So tell them you're a lifeguard. Tell them it's okay. I'm going to rescue you. And, like, then you start swimming over to the...
So you need to keep talking. It's really important to keep talking. Even if it doesn't sound like they're particularly listening to you.
Or as long as they know someone's there and somebody's actually doing something.
It gives them some comfort.
So a person that's drowning, apart from wanting to be rescued, they really need a sense of comfort.
Yes.
And someone talking to them. This sounds very exciting. How exciting is it actually to rescue someone?
It's very exciting.
Yeah.
I mean, we both sat and waited for our first one after. And we both did have, right?
Yeah.
We both did have some this
very
summer.
Quickly you had some rescues.
Yeah.
A week or two later.
A week or two later. So you had to wait to rescue someone. Tell us about that moment. Did you start rehearsing in your mind the things you'd learned? What happened?
Well, for me, the first time was a week later. It was at the diving boards, and I was scared, but it was almost instinct, because you were really...
You're trained so well.
Uh-huh. Very well. But it's really sad, because some people, even after you save the person, they blame you for some reason, so... Yeah.
They blame you after you've just saved their lives.
Yes.
And I guess that's a pretty big damper after you've just performed the rescue.
Especially your first.
Yes.
And so you felt pretty upset after that one?
Yeah. But it still felt good to have saved someone.
You knew the truth that if you hadn't done it, they would have been in a much worse way.
Yes.
Yeah. At the end of the day. And how was your first rescue, Hannah?
Well, I was always wondering, would I be able to get there in time? That was my biggest worry. Would I know what to do, or would I just blank out or start screaming or something? And I was really pleased when someone started drowning that I actually did everything I had trained to do. And it was like your body knew what to do. And then later on, you're like, oh, I just say something. And then you start shivering all nervous. But actually, when you did that, it was
fun. It must be a tremendous feeling of exhilaration too.
Oh, yeah.
To think I've done something that's really, really important. If I hadn't reacted in the way I did, someone may not be here today.
Yes.
And that's a big responsibility. Well, I feel a lot safer knowing that people like you are looking after all of us, big, small, short, at the pools. Thank you. Thank you for taking us into this very exciting and dangerous world. And thank you for all the work you've put into it. It was great having you with us on Storyline. Well, I bet Nathan wished for more training. perhaps like our lifeguards as he faced a life and death situation. King David was in serious trouble. But would he fight it like a drowning man? Would he fight Nathan off when he tried to help? After the break, we're back with special guests as we explore Nathan's life-saving technique. So stay with us. We'll be right back. All of us face situations which make us feel lonely and isolated. On Storyline, we want to assure you that you don't have to face things alone. God is there for you. We also want to help you connect and communicate. You can call us, text us, find Storyline on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, download the app, or subscribe to the HT podcast. We enjoy hearing how Storyline has impacted your life. And again, a big thank you to all of you who have contacted Storyline with comments and questions or interacted on Facebook. We enjoy hearing from you. Now, I have some very special guests with us today. We have Pastor Debbie and Herbert Eisele. Debbie enjoys making the joy of service contagious. Herbert has also made a service a career path. He currently works for the nonprofit Adventist Development and Relief Agency. Welcome to Storyline, both of you. It's great to have you.
Nice to meet you.
Yeah, well, we have another special guest with us today. This is a lady that is now also more behind the scenes, but we've managed to get her this side of the camera. Priscilla, it's great that you've joined us on Storyline. You normally serve as production assistant.
That's correct.
For this great new health program.
Yes, Go Healthy for Good.
Mm-hmm. Do you want to quickly put in an advert for us?
Yes, Go Healthy for Good's live Monday through Thursday at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. So
don't miss it.
No.
Because you see, Priscilla is involved there and it's a great program.
It really is.
So any of you do any swimming lately?
Oh. We feel much safer now that we know those two ladies are in charge.
So which swimming pool were they?
They were at the local pool. You want to go down to that
pool? Yes, it's safe there.
Well, I found it impressive to think of, you know, a big, tall guy like yourself being rescued by one of those little ladies back there. Well, let's talk about a big, big man. Before we start talking about Nathan, which we really do want to talk about, we'll have to look at another giant in the story. A giant that needed rescuing, needed some life-saving. David. David has a very, very big shadow. I'm not sure if Moses is a bigger shadow than David, but I guess they'd be competing for room over here, because everyone else we study, Jonathan, Saul, Job, Goliath, Bathsheba, I mean, these people would never come into the story if it weren't for David. So besides the little boy with the sling, tell us a little bit about David.
Well, David was a king.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting that normally it's like either the first king or with the United States, you know, the first president.
Mm-hmm.
But David was really the second king. And
yes, you know, he gets so much publicity. He really gets a lot of space over here. Why?
Well, David, he expanded Israel to the largest nation at the time. So he was this amazing king. And I mean, I'm sure he was probably very famous at his time and very well loved and liked by the people, because he destroyed Goliath. And we just have so many amazing stories on David as a well writer for the Psalms. And I mean, he's a great guy. He's an amazing one.
I mean, who doesn't know Psalms 23? Mm-hmm. I think it's most of our favorite Psalms, or at least a verse there that we really love and can hang on to. So perhaps it's that element of identifying with him over there.
That came out of nowhere. It came out of the middle of nowhere and became so famous and so well-loved, and possibly, too, because he was a musician and wrote all of the Psalms. And
any of you musicians?
No.
Don't worry, I'm not going to get you to play
I play
on Storyline.
Flute.
You play flute?
I play the flute, yes.
So you'd have that musical link. To,
oh, yes, absolutely. To, I mean, when David. You read his psalms, I mean, they're beautiful. And I'm sure he was a great, amazing player and musician overall.
But he was also a very believable character, wasn't he?
And I think we like to identify with somebody like David. And as David said, he came out of nowhere. He was the last born, the youngest child. He was a shepherd boy, really...
A little lowest, nobody.
The lowest kind of kind of job. Yet he became the king. He became, you know, wow.
Something we all aspire to,
exactly.
Something great in life.
Isn't that something that, you know, we like those kind of underdogs to become.
Oh, yes. I think we can all identify with that aspect of David. How about the part that we're running into in our story today? You know, the adultery and murder and lying and all that kind of thing.
Yeah, X-rated.
Yeah. Doesn't that kind of dampen your enthusiasm for David?
To be honest, it does. For me, it does.
It does in a sense, but, you know, we always... Well, not always, but hopefully not always, but we very often do bad things, not such nice things.
Perhaps yet, not murder and that
well,
kind
I
of
hope
thing.
Not, but, but, you know, he always turned around, and it seems, you know, if you read through the Bible and you read about David, that, you know, God always chose him again and he didn't give up on him. And I think that's sort of the story that's, for me, important, that he doesn't give up. He... It accepts me.
It's important to see that part of him because it shows that he wasn't perfect. Mm-hmm. He had flaws, and who, you know, we all have flaws. We all have flaws.
So it's another point of identification.
Yes, absolutely.
He was so grief-stricken every time he stuffed up. He just wanted to try again and keep going.
And God led him each time. Mm-hmm. Well, that is the good news with David. Mm-hmm. Well, now that we've peeped into this giant's life a little bit, let's talk about the other character that we perhaps know less about over here. Let's talk about Nathan himself. He comes in the story and tells a story. Mm-hmm. Is this all we know about Nathan? Is he one of those in and out guys?
The first time we see him, though, is when he tells David he can't build the temple. Not you. You got too much blood on your hands. And something that David had really wanted to do so badly, but Nathan tells him, nope, not you.
It seems like he's sometimes, Nathan gets the dirty work.
Exactly. It's a very difficult situation.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So, and where does he pop up again? Does he pop up again in the narrative over here?
Yeah, he pops up again when David has the second child with Bathsheba, and he pops it up again.
With bad news again?
Yeah, it's with the names, and he's...
Well, yeah, this time it's good, better news.
It's better news, yeah, but, you know, it's still switching the names, so yes.
Okay, so he's back again.
And then the ticklish situation about who's going to be the next king.
So he plays another role
just before Solomon, just before David was dying, and you had then his...
That brief moment of uncertainty.
And then somebody else was crowned as prince, and...
It was a very complex situation.
And Nathan came in. Yeah, he seems to be a very...
Shall we call him a lifesaver?
Lifesaver or a pea to make peace. Or
He encourages Bathsheba to go in, talk to the king and smooth things over.
We're talking about the last instance, at least with the...
Yes, with King David. Mm-hmm.
This is a man that has a lot of tact that really just seems to hit me. He comes in the toughest situations with the toughest messages and somehow... He makes things work.
Exactly.
Ah, that's something we're going to have to look at a whole lot closer here. There is an awful lot wrong with our society today. And there are people all around us living pretty immoral lives. In this story, well, is the story calling us to take a stand against evil in society and talk out against it, maybe tactfully? Should we be out there with our posters and our signs? After the break, we'll explore this question and a lot of other good questions, so stay with us. We'll be right back. In case you've just joined us, we're discussing the story of Nathan and David, found in 2 Samuel 12. I have to ask a question right in the, well, we're not quite in the beginning, but before we even begin this section. This whole business about tact. If you have truth on your side, if you know what you're saying is the right thing, it's biblical, you can stand on it. Why do you need to be tactful about it? Isn't that kind of a sign of weakness? Shouldn't you just be able to go out there and do it?
Go ahead.
Who's the most tactful?
Oh, no.
Oh, the Bible says that in truth and in the spirit of God. So to say it with love, or else it's not worth saying at all, I think. 1 Corinthians 13 teaches that.
Yeah. So you don't want to hurt others either. I mean, even though you have truth on your side, you may hurt your brother and sister if you just, you know, smash that mm-hmm. message into them. So you have to be careful and sensitive to them as well.
Mm-hmm. So it's just kind of a sensitivity even when you have the truth on your side?
Well, you imagine if Nathan would have come into David and, you, look at you. How would David have reacted? He's the king.
Defensive, maybe.
And mm-hmm. He would have, and myself too, yourself too. You know, everyone, if somebody comes up very...
Pointing the finger.
Exactly. You right away put up a fence and you want to mm-hmm. defend yourself. Whereas the way Nathan did it was really, you know, going around the bush a little bit and very telling the story. Mm-hmm. And David got so mad at him, you know, oh, let's get that rich guy.
Let's talk about the story. You've started us off on the story here. Let's talk about the story. It's a unique story. Wouldn't it have been a bit strange? I mean, do you think David found it out of place when Nathan marches in there and starts talking about sheep?
Not at all. That was his lifeblood, his passion, was sheep.
Yeah, we're talking about the 23rd Psalm
yes,
writer.
Yes, yes.
So I guess his ears pricked up when he heard about sheep. Mm-hmm. But he goes and he picks this poor man versus the rich man kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Why does
so the
he
roles
do this?
Flipped that way. He could see both sides of the story in that way. Mm. So he's able to draw him in before he even realizes.
So it's this drawing in that Nathan really wanted to do. He wanted to pull David into the story.
Yeah, it seems that David really got involved in that story because he got so angry.
He must have had a little lamb like that too that he felt close to.
He was a shepherd, so he knew lambs. And so, exactly,
It's interesting how people have a soft spot for animals very often. Of course, if you're a dog lover, then you just have to mention dogs. And if you're a cat lover or a bird lover or whatever, people go to tremendous lengths for a pet.
Yes, save the whales or save this and that, but who cares about the people?
Which is very true in this case. Mm-hmm. If he had gone straight on with the pain that he had caused a lot of people, there would have perhaps been less reception. Mm-hmm. But he goes to an animal, mm-hmm. and David completely opens up on this animal thing. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, the king also had a role as a judge. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of interesting that David immediately passes judgment. Do you think this is part of Nathan's strategy?
Oh. Absolutely. I mean, well, where else? What's the other way for him to get David into realizing what he's done? So this was a perfect tact that Nathan mm-hmm. used.
What you really want is for a person to recognize themselves mm-hmm. rather than being told mm-hmm. from an outside mm-hmm. source. And this seems to have worked really well with David actually pronouncing the death sentence on the man. And then he must have realized, well, maybe the death sentence is a little extreme for a lamb, but still it's awful. Yeah. Four times payback at least. This is, of course, paves the way for Nathan to say, you are the man.
You're the one.
Well, let's jump ahead to our next question. There is an awful lot wrong in our society, a lot more than rich people stealing poor people's little lambs. For the most part, adultery isn't even a big deal thing today. Mm-hmm. I think we draw the line before murder, but for most other things, for lying and for all the other deceitful things, you know, one probably shouldn't do it, but as long as you don't get caught, it's probably okay. Is this story calling us to a different moral level? Are we supposed to be doing something about the morals in society?
Well, we certainly need to be setting examples and lead by example.
How do you feel about placards, posters, being out there?
In your face kind of thing?
Yeah.
That's a little bit, again, like you know, going out, being angry, look what you guys are doing, rather than, you know, do it gently.
It wouldn't attract me.
If, you know, you can see once in a while people sending with placards, it's the end of the world, or who knows what, you know, people laugh about it, they look at it and say, ugh.
Not that attraction. It would turn you off.
It would turn me
immediately.
Off.
Not only that, but in this case, we're talking about a personal experience that David went through. And, I mean, nowadays, we don't want, for example, posting on Facebook, Twitter about someone's life. You have to respect that. So you have to be sensitive again. And
I think we'd call it bullying, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Exactly.
And there's quite a movement against bullying. Putting things out there that's really personal and hurtful, and having it out there for sensation, and for all the world to stare at and look at.
Exactly. When you think of how Jesus dealt with the Pharisees, and when he rebuked them, he had tears in his eyes. So there's the mercy and the tact and the compassion in with the truth.
So these two are not exclusive. You often get the impression that if you're going to be loving and tactful and nice, well, you might just have to brush truth aside or at least play it down.
No, you still need to be firm.
So you're saying truth still needs to be told.
Need to be firm, yeah, but kind.
Firm, but loving, kind.
Loving, kind.
Yes. Loving.
I mean, Nathan, he told the truth, didn't he?
Yeah, that was a real hard message that he gave out.
In a very kind manner. Mm-hmm. He didn't point his fingers and, you sinner, and you'll burn in hell.
So he definitely, he looks for an entry and gently comes in.
Exactly.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
You were saying beforehand, Priscilla, about this very militant approach.
Yeah, I mean, you just have to pray a lot before approaching someone. It's very important for you to pray in regards to that before approaching that person to point out something that they're doing wrong in their lives. So you have to do it in prayer, I'd say.
So the objective is not to show someone up and win an argument. No. Exactly. There's something deeper over here. It's really a concern for the person that motivates us.
And the Holy Spirit puts the words in your mouth and prayed about that situation, yes.
Mm. Which I guess must have happened, particularly with Nathan, that he comes to such a fantastic idea. I would never have thought of telling a story of sheep, and he knew sheep was the way to David's heart, David the shepherd.
So there's that component of creativity, too, with the tact and the compassion and the truth.
Creativity.
Yes.
And creativity and creator seem to go very closely together to me.
Yes.
Sharing a little bit of God when we become tactful in a situation. Well, in the last part of Nathan's message, he assures David, after he's been through this tactful message, he assures David that his sin has been forgiven. But then if we read on, we find that the child still dies. What is the point of being forgiven if we are still left with the results? We'll be right back after the break to discuss this question and others. Stay with us. We've been speaking about Nathan's confrontation with King David. Nathan's story of that lamb has its desired impact. David confesses his sin. Does tact always work?
No.
Is this a 1+1=2 formula?
There are people who take advantage of that.
Have you had an experience where you used tact and it worked or didn't work?
Oh, no.
Where it didn't work?
Not good at remembering details.
Would it always work?
No.
We agree on this.
It won't always work because it depends if the person who is receiving this message you're about to give, if they're open to listen to God's voice. Because if they're closed, if they don't want to listen to what you have to tell them, you can use them as much tactic as you'd like to, it won't reach them. You'll have no effect.
I think you're hitting the nail on the head here. If we go back to your example of Jesus and the Pharisees earlier on,
that didn't work very well.
It was tactfully done, but it didn't seem to work.
No.
So tact wouldn't be the only component here.
But I still think in more cases than not, tact works. At least it works much better than...
than not trying it. Absolutely. Trying it.
What did King David say about honey? It has that effect of honey.
Sweet as honey. Yes. Yeah. Well, some people just don't like honey, and that would be the end of that. But generally... Most times it will work.
And honey attracts.
Honey attracts. It's attractive. Mm-hmm. Sweetness is generally attractive. Mm. Is tact and sweetness the same thing?
Tact and sweetness the same thing.
Not necessarily. Okay, so what is tact?
Mm.
What would you define, layman? It doesn't have to be a dictionary definition. You forgot your dictionary. What would you define tact as? Would you say I was a tactful person?
I think it's when you're certain of your objective and you work it out so you can reach that objective.
So you're saying this sounds a little manipulative.
Yeah. You have to be strategic when using tactics in some way.
Okay, so you've got a strategy.
It's like framing the situation to put it in the best possible light, help that person feel drawn into the story enough that they will identify with it. It's just a framing in the...
So it's framing, maybe disarming they will accept the truth better.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and you can help people be more objective about it that way and bring in some humor too sometimes.
Mm. Mm. Now, for some of us, humor would be quite easy. Humor would be easy for you, Herbert.
I've been a teacher before I started working with Andrew, and I naturally had to deal with a lot of...
You need a tact.
And, you know, as teacher... I guess you can go in and pointing your finger and
you have the authority to bring behind you as well.
You do, but it very, very seldom works. Very sometimes you do have to use, especially as a teacher with high school kids, you do have to use force and
a firm line.
Yes.
Okay.
But in probably 99% of the cases, to be tactful, to be understanding of the other person, why you are doing it, and to understand the other person is
it's going to get you a longer way.
Exactly.
Much, much further than
just going straight on.
It shows them respect. People respond to respect.
Exactly.
And especially when you're dealing with young people, actually when you're dealing with anyone, we want to be respected.
Yes, exactly. And understood. That's how you're drawn in that way.
Well, you're making me very curious. If I'm not a naturally tactful person, now some of us are born with less tact than others. Is that goodbye, or is it something that I can actually learn?
It can be learned, I believe, because I mean, when you pray, when you ask God to give you that wisdom to talk to someone in regards, you know, to use your tact, to give you that tact, He will give you, just like He gave it to Nathan. Mm-hmm. He'll definitely give it.
So we have the example in Nathan. God gives him the tact. Exactly. So there's hope for all of us that just shoot our mouths off, that we can learn tact.
Speaking the truth in love, and so pray for compassion. That's what I do.
It's a big step. Actually, when you feel with the person and you feel for the person, it puts us, as you say, in this position to be tactful.
You want to be able to bring out the best in them. The best of the situation.
Now, what's the difference between giving the truth and being judgmental?
Oh, that's a huge difference.
A huge difference.
Yes.
But you're saying the same thing. You shouldn't be doing this. This is wrong. Don't do it.
But you let that person come to their own conclusion. Somehow, by the wording, you help them reach that conclusion, just like Nathan did with David.
So that would be
they judge themselves.
You judge yourself.
Yes.
As opposed to me judging you.
Exactly. Exactly.
Well, I think,
And very often, if you judge yourself, you're much stricter.
Like David was. David was.
He should die four times over. So the idea is to help someone to get this perspective on themselves.
Exactly.
I think this is really the ideal situation where you help someone to realize, like with Nathan, suddenly David realized, I have sinned. You know, sometimes you get into situations where down to really maybe not that close to God, or
and
you
do
something wrong.
Really feel that strongly
and,
about it.
And maybe afterwards you've done whatever you've been doing, you think, oh, it's not really that bad. With David, well, I'm the king. I mean, excuse me, I can do what I want.
Now, let's lead on to the very difficult. This is probably our last question that we'll have time for, but if you're forgiven, why do you still have to live with the results in this? Nathan brings the good news at the end of this hard message. You're forgiven. But why does that child still die?
Well, God is a very just God, and when this child dies, David goes through David goes through this long suffering. He fasts for 7 days. He prays a lot. So that's the time that God, God is just because he gives this consequence to the sin. But yet he's also merciful God that allows David to repent, to truly repent for his sin that he has committed. So
it's probably worse for David to see his child die than to have his own.
Well, I guess as parents, we can feel that one very close up. Yeah. So it's a very narrow line here. Forgiveness and consequences.
Exactly.
Sometimes God does remove the consequences, and that's great. And ultimately, God will remove all the consequences. But sometimes we still have to face them.
Mm-hmm. But forgiveness is not a make-believe situation. It's not sweeping the matter under the carpet. Mm-hmm. You do have to face it. In most cases, you would have to face.
You'll have to face up to it. Mm-hmm. Okay, if you can summarize in one or two words, really quickly, what is your favorite part of the story, Herbert?
The forgiveness part.
Forgiveness.
God forgave even somebody like David, so he will forgive me too.
Definitely a highlight.
I like the fact that Psalm 51 came out of all of this when you read that.
You can't read that psalm and not be really impacted.
So that came out of the depths of his heart after that experience.
It's great to have the assurance that when you need to approach someone, God will put the right words, will give you the wisdom to talk to them about the problem.
Give you the wisdom and the tact of Nathan, even if you have to face a King David. Well, it's been wonderful exploring this story with you. Thank you so much for joining me. It was great.
Thank you.
I really enjoyed discussing this story. If you came in halfway through the program and you missed out on part of it, don't worry, all's not lost. You can go to hopetv.org/storyline. You can watch this episode and any other episode at your leisure. If you want to share your reaction to the story, just go to our website or post on Facebook and Twitter. And remember, Storyline is available in the iTunes Store as a podcast. You can download it and watch it on the go. Now, don't go anywhere. There's still more right after the break. Tone can make or break the music. If my instrument is off key, my playing will not be music to your ears, even if my fingering is right. All I'll be making is an awful noise. Like David, there are lots of people that I come into contact with that are desperately entangled in life situations and need to know the danger that they're in. Like God's prophet Nathan, I may be called to carry God's warning message to others. But before I do, I need to learn to make sure that I have the right tone. I'll have to approach my task with humility and pray for the tact that I so desperately need. Before helping others, I need to take that moment and look in. Very often, the things I accuse others of, I'm guilty too. Speaking God's messages is not about being right and winning an argument. It's all about pointing to a better way, God's way, and being willing to walk with someone, being there even though they may face real tough consequences. I don't just want to preach. I must be willing to go with others. Until next time, I'd like to invite you to put the plot of your storyline into the hands of a God who wants to walk with you all the way.